When asked about President Trump's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh during an interview with CBS News this morning, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said he will fight the nomination with everything he's got, which means he should probably be confirmed by this time tomorrow. The Trump Report starts now.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the Trump Report. We are going to be talking about Here Comes the Judge. I'm Christian Blatt, back after a week off. Hope everybody enjoyed celebrating America. Whether you love it or hate it, you can celebrate it. That's fine. We welcome all here on the Trump Report. And as I said, I'm Christian Blatt. Joined for a first-timer here on the panel, Steve Kaufman or Kaufman? I realized I didn't ask that. And
Kaufman, because I'm at least third generation German.
Yeah, okay.
So if your grandfather said, the way your grandfather says it is the way it is.
Right.
And okay. I was always taught the fact you could love it or hate it is why it's America.
Yeah, well, my grandfather, it's not a good judge because he called Italians eye ties. So obviously, you know, it's not where we're going to go. And on the other end of the desk, the one, the only, Chelsea Galicia. Hi, Chelsea.
Hello.
We'll get some of our regulars back next week, but we're glad that Steve was able to answer the bat signal on short notice. For those who do or don't know, Chelsea, we often refer to you as a recovering lawyer, but I feel like the recovery's not going well. You know,
I have suffered a relapse.
Yeah, you've definitely relapsed. So,
but it's, I've kept it to like a hobby, or like I would say, a after hours.
It's an addiction.
An after five.
Right.
So it's a controlled addiction.
So it's like how people are social drinkers.
Exactly.
You know,
okay. Yes.
It's not
I'm a social lawyer.
You're a social lawyer.
You're a part-time lawyer.
Fortunately for us, you know, somebody in the chat might say you're a socialist lawyer. I'm just saying that somebody in the chat, we're not going to say who that
Democratic
is.
A democratic socialist lawyer.
Thank you.
Must be correct
because
with your words.
To some people, that term socialist is an insult, but Chelsea would say,
It's not an insult, it's just inaccurate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But
we care about accuracy.
Because of your background, I would like to ask you about Brett Kavanaugh. We can certainly get plenty of opinion, but let's start with some facts.
Okay. Ooh, I love
some
those.
Reading, yeah.
Yeah. So, who is this guy? He is a Yale guy, which, like everybody else on the court, is either a Yale or a Harvard guy. So much for, you know, diversity. I was thinking, you know, Trump might go out on the limb and get somebody from, like, an unaccredited law school or something. That would be
from
very
Trump University,
Trump.
Perhaps?
Yes.
See? How can you say it's a failure?
Right. So, I mean, surprise, not surprise, you know, this was on the short list by the Federalists, who is this group that say they're very committed to the letter of the law and the Constitution, which I love that you take issue with that, because there's lots to take issue with. Like, the word internet did not exist at the time that the Constitution or the amendments were drafted.
Well, I mean, the word electricity. We'll take it a few steps back before internet. Yeah, there's a lot of things that they weren't able to factor in.
So to be a strict constructionist who only looks at the letter of the law and the Constitution and applies that to modern day law is,
yeah, because you do have the people who just view the Bill of Rights. Like, they're like, oh, the first 10 amendments were good, but man, they sold out after that. So, obviously, what were you going to say, Steve?
Well, but my issue with anyone who tells me that they want to follow the Constitution by the way it was written never understood the Constitution. Because the Constitution was written ambiguously because they knew they couldn't possibly foresee a world with electricity and internet and cars and worldwide war and America as a world superpower and then everyone being able to communicate within seconds. So the letter of, like, the Constitution is written is useless.
Right. And so then the argument, you know, by people who say, I like, you know, judges who just look at the law, interpret the law, and don't write their own law, you know, have this extreme point where it's either we look at the exact words in the Constitution and follow those, or judges are making up their own law. And there's not something in between where they're interpreting this, you know, 240 some odd years ago by some standards is an ancient text, right? So how do you apply this ancient text to, like, our modern legal challenges? You know, so that's why I think that I love that you take issue with that, even as a non-lawyer, and hopefully see that there are, like, shades of gray in this, like, you know, strict construction versus judges who just are making up the law themselves. There is, you know, much
But I think the fact that that's the two sides part of my problem is that the fact that, oh, judges are either reading the Constitution literally or they're making it up.
Well, no,
like, is a complete fabrication.
Liberals don't say that the judges should be making it up. The conservatives are saying that's what happened. So be that as it may. So that's, you know, one fart.
Oh, no, that statement to me is
wow. Did you just say fart on the show? Chelsea, what has happened to you?
I don't know. And I am going to, you know, pretty soon talk about anal sex with respect to this analysis.
I'm sorry,
did
I sit on the wrong show today?
I'm confused.
This is
The Handmaid's Tale.
I figured that prequel. That my conversation about the makeup of what will soon be the court deserved a little discussion of the Fourth Amendment. And I understand that for some people that might be a little dry. So I thought I would include some subject matter about the Fourth Amendment and what it covers so that people might be interested. And part of that does include what you can do in the privacy of your own home with another consenting adult.
And sometimes the problems with that is that is also dry. Steve, when you heard about...
I saw the wheels in your mind moving.
They were moving very slow. Yeah. They were moving very slow. It was sort of very obvious, and I almost stopped myself. But you know me, I can't. So the little bit that you've heard, I think that there are certainly people who had heard Kavanaugh's name around before. But so you hear about this nominee. You've had, we've had almost 12 hours now to soak in who he is. What are sort of your gut reactions when you hear about this guy?
From me that wants the Trump machine to fail a little, I disagree with everyone this morning who's saying that he's the most confirmable of the three. I thought Amy What's-Her-Face was the least they're saying that he's the least confirmable.
He's the least confirmable.
This morning have all been saying he's the least confirmable because he has the most decisions in the book. What they're forgetting is that there's a majority, so that doesn't actually matter. Whereas the woman who was also the youngest of the three
yesterday. Yeah, and all I remember is that her name is Amy as well.
And
so.
That she was an appointee from Donald Trump within two years, and I thought she would be a political move that would have backfired.
Yeah.
In the sense that she would have never gotten confirmed.
Yeah,
she would have
never
gotten confirmed, and then it would have made it to the election, and then the base would have turned out for the election. A Supreme Court seat's at stake.
Right, exactly. And I think the obviously Democrats have the hope that somehow this hearing would drag on beyond that. But my little pot shot at Chuck Schumer in the open. There's not really much they can do about this. They can complain about it all they want.
It's true. They can ask Mitch McConnell, hey, you said in the year of an election you shouldn't confirm a nominee.
But you do know what his answer is that was a presidential election. So that's already what he said. I'm certainly not defending Mitch McConnell, but that's what he said. So that's already his stance on it. It's like, that's a presidential election. That's very different as far as he's concerned.
It's a distinction without a difference, or a difference without a distinction.
One of the same. Yeah.
That explains Mitch McConnell pretty well to me. But it's just like, you know, he wants what he wants, and he'll change the rules to make it happen however he wants it.
And defend.
Sure. And I mean, look, obviously you end up in a situation like this because of precedent. And, you know, I don't think Harry Reid really did Democrats any favors, you know, playing some fast and loose with some rules back in his day. And then, you know, but look, everybody does it.
At the time, it was a stalemate. There was no way to get anything done.
Yeah.
And so we felt that this was the only way to allow government to move forward.
And to give Harry Reid and Obama some credit at that time, the stalemate was because the Democrats tried to work with Republicans, and the Republicans just thwarted them at every cost. That they were like, well, we have a majority. We tried.
Yeah.
Let's keep the government moving. Whereas that doesn't happen. Like, I don't see that happening today. The Republicans pretty much say, we have the majority. We're going to do it. And the Democrats say, but we're in the room, though. We can get a subcommittee and do the, like, well, whatever. We're just going to pass the stuff.
Right. I mean, ultimately, when it comes down to the fact that there will obviously be hearings, you don't really get much out of the hearings. I mean, apart from Clarence Thomas and the pubic hair on the Coke can. I mean, honestly, I guess Judge Bork before that, you don't get much out of these hearings. They give the most bland, safe, noncommittal answers. And you're just like, you know, if you go based on what everybody says, it's like, oh, well, then obviously everybody will uphold the letter of the law because they're all going to say the right things. It's like a really bad blind date. You know, you're going to sit down. And you're going to obviously put your your best foot forward. I was going to make a comment about swiping right, but that's I actually don't know. Is that when you like someone or is it when you don't like
that's
someone?
That's when you like
someone. That's when you like someone. All right, good. I'm glad you knew. So, yeah. So they're going to just try and see if maybe, just maybe, somebody dreamy like Chuck Schumer will swipe right on you. I don't know. I mean, do you think, Chelsea, that really the hearings are actually going to yield anything other than on both sides, political posturing?
No.
There's going to be a lot of like, well, you know, people that are going to be up for re-election in November and people that are looking further down the road, they're like, well, this will look good in my commercial. I stood up to Brett Kavanaugh, you know.
Yeah, I don't think that this is going to be a big deal. I don't think that Lisa Murkowski or...
Collins.
Are going to do anything surprising or maybe we're going to get 50 votes yes and then Pence is a tiebreaker. You know, whatever.
He'll come in there to the Rocky theme and obviously
save the day. But I kind of just want to put this on the record. Conservatives, be careful what you ask for because... Mind if I go into my...
Please. So you want to talk about the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah.
So, and give us the few word, so, you know, how like the, you know, First Amendment, freedom of speech, you know, that sort of thing. So what exactly is the Fourth Amendment?
Ironically, the thing that the Fourth Amendment represents, the word is not in the actual amendment. So generally the way to, you know, say, condense it what it is like privacy.
Okay.
But the word privacy is nowhere in it. Let me tell you what I mean, because it says, and it's not long, I promise, it says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So basically, government can't come in and take stuff from you without a warrant. They can't unreasonably search you. So what does that have to do with privacy? Is that the whole analysis bends on what somebody has a reasonable expectation of privacy over. And that's how we get all sorts of decisions from abortion to who can have what kind of sex to, you know, birth control are all... constitutionally connected by the Fourth Amendment's baked in right to privacy. So let me explain what I mean. Birth control, the case was in 1965, Griswold versus Connecticut. The court decided it was the right of a couple to have their own privacy and determine if they want to use birth control. The anti-sodomy laws that I'm referring to, you know, tried to tell people that homosexuals couldn't engage in certain kinds of sex acts.
Let me just interrupt for a minute. Are those laws, I thought that those were state laws and still on the books in some states.
Those were on the, they were state laws.
Right.
And somebody in Texas, it's only one, thank God, I think I almost pluralized it, Texas challenged.
Our friend Shareable Texas would take umbrage. And so would our friend Brooke Solis, who's from Texas. But anyway, go ahead.
Challenged the law, and the court said that this is constitutionally invalid because it infringes on somebody's right to privacy, and also their 14th Amendment due process. So they kind of go hand in hand in a lot of cases. Roe versus Wade. The abortion decision was not decided because the Supreme Court found in the Constitution that there was their right to abortion. They found it because there was a right to privacy between a woman and her doctor to make medical decisions, including those based on pregnancy. So that's the constitutional logic that gave rise to Roe versus Wade. And to some extent, same-sex marriage. And a lot of these cases that people are concerned about, what is this one judge's decisions on those things going to be? But if you take away, if you pull out Roe versus Wade and flip it and say we no longer have a right to abortion, it's not just that we no longer have a right to abortion. It's that the underlying constitutional logic, the explanation for why we had that right in the first place, will also have to be reversed. So that will mean then that the court will have to say, we were wrong on this privacy thing. People don't have this right to privacy. And it will slowly but surely undermine, I kind of envision it in my mind like Jenga pieces, where you pull out case by case. You don't like birth control, you pull that out. You don't like abortion, you pull that out. But soon enough, you're going to really weaken the structures that we have around our privacy protections. And so things like government surveillance might have, on the surface, nothing to do with abortion. But same, Fourth Amendment is what protects us from government surveillance or things of that nature. And that's not protecting us very well right now. But, you know, let's just say somebody takes your, you know, information from social media and hands that over to the government. Could do that in this, you know, day and age.
Would the person taking my information off social media be, I don't know, Facebook?
Right. A private entity. However, a private entity and these, how cozy these corporations are now becoming with the government. It's almost like, you know, a private corporation can be an arm of the government and retrieve this data, you know, on behalf of the government, and thereby kind of going around the Constitution. There, what I'm saying is we are, if you are... a vote for Kavanaugh is a vote to weaken our privacy rights. He has made decisions on warrantless searches by the government. Says government data can collect what, you know, is one of those that protects, that sees that the government can, in the name of national security.
Well, I was going to ask, because that seems to be something that, you know, also our previous president did on occasion. You know, it's not specifically a partisan issue. It seems to be sort of whenever you really need to circumvent somebody's rights, you say, well, obviously it's a national security threat. And look, sometimes I think it really is. And I think, I don't know, I hear plenty of cases where I'm like, yeah, all right. Well, you know, I don't like the precedent, but good that they got this information out of, you know, this person.
Well, depending on who you ask, we've never gotten anything from, you know, torturing anybody or violating somebody's rights. That the information that the government has collected is just so massive that is too much and overwhelming and has not actually led to any more safe.
Yeah, no, I do feel bad that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed didn't have a nice pillow, but I'll get over it, I think. So in terms of Roe versus Wade, it's something that Kavanaugh's been asked about before. It is the clip that you see a lot, but he wasn't nominated for the Supreme Court
right.
at
He's
that
like,
point.
I'll follow
in fact,
that.
His answers are very specifically like, well, you know, that's the Supreme Court precedent. So I guess, and you know, look, we'll move on from the one issue, but it's obviously the one that seemingly the majority of people are most concerned about. And look, on the conservative side, I know a lot of people who disliked Donald Trump, but they disliked him less than they disliked Hillary Clinton. And the one reason that they didn't stay home and vote is because of the idea that they could get some Supreme Court justices. So for them, this is an important issue for sort of the other side because well, they do want to.
Why I say they're going to shoot themselves in the foot, be careful what you ask for, is because you take away the strength of the case on Roe versus Wade, you pull out the privacy. And conservatives all over the place are like, they want to be free to do whatever they want. They don't want government to infringe on their lives. They want to have their own liberties and freedoms and privacy, right? So this sword cuts both ways. If you're going to limit people's access to abortion by undermining their privacy rights, it's also going to come back to bite you.
What were you going to say about that, Steve?
I will say that there's a separate issue here, which is will Kavanaugh, like, I believe it's the Ginsburg rule, where in hearings, they like Ginsburg decided she would not mention a case that may or may not come up in nomination. So when you ask him about Roe versus Wade and his nomination, he's just going to run out the clock and say, I don't know. Right. I don't know. That's as of this moment, I'm a nominee for Supreme Court. And at this moment, I'd be giving you an opinion.
Yeah.
I can't just say I'm going to read the case and see what the merits
right. are. Well, this goes back to the earlier point that you're not going to get anything
well,
out of these hearings.
Well, yeah. And it goes back to the early point that Supreme Court nominations have become such a useless show. But within the useless show, there are some things the Democrats can do. Because under that Ginsburg rule, you can also they use that Ginsburg rule to also say that any public information that person had ruled on or ever said is then able to be used in the nomination hearing. So correct me if I'm wrong, but it was Justice Kagan who was Obama's second appointee.
I believe she was.
She worked in the Clinton White House or the Obama White House. My data is not perfect, but she worked.
She worked under a Democrat for
sure. Under in a Democratic White House, which means everything she said in that White House was in the presidential library and considered public record.
Yeah.
So that became part of her nomination. I see no reason why what this person said in the Bush White House, if we're putting on a show anyway, and we're all just trying to rally our base to come out and like, I was tough on this person and voted no for these reasons. Like, if we're going to put on a show, put on a great show.
Right.
And I think this is some of the stuff you can do to put on a great show in a nomination.
And the point blank question for both of you really is, I don't see a scenario where he's not named to the Supreme Court. I don't think that the numbers are there. You know, I mean, Chelsea, I think that's sort of what you were saying earlier when you said why the hearings don't matter that
much. I'm resigned. And I also have very little hope that Democrats will take control of the Senate come November, so they can try and delay
it.
Because they
win some elections in November, you know, there's still month of November and all of December that a lot can happen.
Unless somebody comes out and finds some really terrible thing that this guy said or did once.
But I don't think people get that upset by, you know, the only person to really suffer for having said something bad in the 2016 presidential election was Billy Bush. He's still not on TV. He's the guy who has been made to pay. So I don't know.
He didn't say anything either.
It's true.
He was in the room.
That's a great point.
On the bus with a guy.
He got in trouble for
terrible.
Not saying something. He just was like, it's all he ever does. That's all Billy Bush ever did. Anyway. So one thing I want to talk about, you know, you had mentioned both Murkowski and Collins came up. I thought it was, speaking of showmanship, President Trump, to the hearing last night, he invited Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins and the three Democrats who voted yes on Neil Gorsuch, who are Joe Manchin. I almost said Helmkamp. That's Heitkamp. Helmkamp is somebody we used to do the Trump versus Hillary with, and Joe Donnelly. Mm-hmm. So, and none of them went. Mm-hmm. So I think even Lisa Murkowski, well, you know what? Maybe she wanted to be watching The Bachelorette, which that's sort of a side story that there was a caught up in all the backlash to the pick was that the people watching The Bachelorette on ABC were very upset that this nomination interrupted it. So, you know,
yikes.
You should really time things around the commercials better, but that's all right.
I actually have I felt this way with Neil Gorsuch, too, aside from the fact he shouldn't have had that he shouldn't have had that ability. But when he decides to do it 9 p.m. Eastern on a week on a Monday night, I actually agree with that. I think more presidents should have some pomp and circumstance in a show to things that are that important.
Yeah, no, I mean, Reagan was great at it. And there was one time where I think it was ABC got tired of it and they didn't air it. And then all of a sudden they found themselves with worse seats in the briefing room. You know, they definitely were penalized for it. And, you know, there are people who are decent at manipulating the media and kind of getting what they want out of them. So that sounds like President Trump. So I think putting it in a spot where, that's the first thing I heard when I heard that it was going to be at 9 p.m. Eastern. It's like, all right, yeah, because you're getting a primetime show out of it.
And I hate that that's his mentality.
Yeah.
But I do agree that a Supreme Court justice is a pretty big deal.
It should have been Trump. You know, The Bachelor, Bachelorette. I don't even know which one it is.
I believe it's The Bachelorette, but I also I only heard that earlier this morning. So
the one with the rose.
But the other thing that I want to say that we really want to be careful of is everybody's focusing on past precedents, a little bit of superfluous there, on, you know, abortion and things like that. But the cases that are to come that have to do with corporate personhood are where, for me, this is not looking good. That his record on consumer protection and, you know, all things individual liberties is very weak and very strong advocate of corporations and their rights of personhood, which really bums me out.
That is laughable in theory.
So I just and as corporations get stronger in their rights and individuals and specifically our privacy gets weaker, I think conservatives are going to be like, holy shnikes, what did I do in supporting somebody so conservative? I thought, you know, I was standing up for, you know, the good Christian values of, you know, no abortion and things like that. But now I have no rights. Not only is the government infringing upon me, but so is corporate America. Mm. and then they feel quite stifled in their individual privacy. And I think, I don't know, 10 years and they'll be coming to regret their choice.
Don't ever discount the Republicans' ability to blame the Democrats for everything that's currently wrong.
Yes.
Right. I mean,
they're incredible at that.
Sure. I mean, it's sort of an intrinsic reflexive thing, like that you're always going to blame the other party. But yeah, Harley Davidson
is somehow Obama's fault. I don't know how. They'll find a way to make that Obama's fault.
Right.
Like, it's the most artful thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. No,
like,
no.
I on just a pure merit based, I have respect. Where it's like, that's kind of ridiculous. Like, you're amazing.
I mean, like, there's definitely sort of a lot of that, you know, reluctant, like, you have to kind of tip your red hat sometimes. And you're just like, well, I don't know if I like what's going on here, but he definitely worked this whole thing out. You know, getting to be president in the first place. You're just like, you know, literally everyone said that you couldn't do it. So it's really just a consistent, almost 2 years now of just telling him he can't do things. I did want to move on to another legal topic, and that is how Rudy Giuliani says Michael Cohen should cooperate with prosecutors. Every time Rudy says something, I'm just like, did anyone vet what you said? Like,
Who's left to vet?
Well, I mean, anybody. No, I mean, anybody at, you know, I mean, Rudy anybody in the president's office. And the fact that Rudy's still there.
If Rudy Giuliani's your legal counsel, yeah. I think most of the intelligent people have left. Like, you're down to Rudy, like, that he can't be your first choice as a lawyer. He's no one's fifth choice.
He clearly wasn't, because he's getting a job, you know, sort of, I don't know. I mean, he's getting a job 2 years in, basically.
He interviewed for that job on Fox News.
Yeah.
So, like, it's, I don't know, like, is anyone vetting him is the question? No. No one's left.
I mean, he thinks that he's just saying, yes, of course, cooperate with prosecutors because we have nothing to hide. I don't know. Does Giuliani not, is he not in on the truth? Like, he doesn't.
Well, that's the thing is, I think that, you know, he was away from the party for a little while. And I don't mean the party, the GOP. I mean, he's away from the Trump party.
Yeah.
You know, he was off doing, well, if you read the New York Post, you know exactly what he was up to, but he wasn't doing anything professional. So I think that he's probably there because he has plausible deniability on a lot of stuff. Because he's just like, yeah, of course that'll happen. Because he doesn't know. Mm. It, maybe that's why he's there, to be kept in the dark. And like, yeah, you weren't here. You have no idea what was going on.
I think it was a very interesting statement for Cohen to come out and say, my loyalty is to my wife and my kids and country over party. I have to read into that only because most people just at this stage just shut up and they're quiet. So if they say anything, especially something like that, that's definitely getting my one eyebrow up. I don't think it was just an off the cuff statement.
No, I mean, I think that was a very carefully worded statement that, you know, it's definitely a message to some obvious people what he was trying to say there, you know.
So. And so then does this, I don't know if this, the pardoning of these two guys in Oregon is any more of like, look at the strength of my pardoning power.
Let's
wave it like a little carrot.
I try as much as I want to put a lot of stock in the impeachment business. I understand.
Well, you would get along with Scott, who's usually here on the show.
But that's a fantasy.
He's got a countdown clock.
But it's a complete fantasy.
Yes.
Because impeachment is not a legal or criminal decision. It's a political one. And Trump already won that game.
And Democrats don't have the makeup with which to do that. You know,
no,
and I think that's the main reason why you hear, you know, your Chuck Schumers and everybody saying, like, yeah, we're not going to do that now. Because they know they can't actually do it.
I would slightly disagree with you, only to the extent that there are some very legally sound grounds on which to impeach him. Emoluments, the self-dealings.
I am in complete agreement.
Lots of corruption. It's just what Christian's saying, the numbers. You don't have the numbers in the House to impeach and then in the Senate to sort of confirm impeachment and actually
It doesn't make it a legal process. And then even if that does happen, or even if they subpoena him, even if any, like, they try to prosecute him, it's never been tested. He could pardon himself.
Or, you know, Kavanaugh wrote a piece at one point in some decision saying that the Congress may want to look into shielding the president from any indictment or investigation.
Which was a flop from when he was on the Starr investigation and felt that you should totally investigate the president. So Kavanaugh's got a lot to answer to that he's not going to.
Yeah, there's very little that he'll actually answer to. Before we run out of time, Chelsea, I know that there was something else you wanted to talk about, which was a deadline that we had today. And
we've all become very excited or enraged, depending on where you stand, by the Supreme Court nomination. But there are still somewhat like 3,000 kids that are separated from their parents. And there was a deadline by a court today that they were supposed to return all children under 5 years old, which are about 104 of them, and it is the day of the deadline, and only half of them have been returned. So the court said, yeah, we need to extend it because it's not feasible for the government to return them all. They've lost track of some parents because parents have been, you know, deported or released, and which goes to show that Alex Azar, Human Health and Services Secretary, when he said, oh, yeah, I can find any person right away in my database, was just flat out lying,
although that is an on the job lie. I mean, I think we've all said that. Oh yeah, I can absolutely get that done. Even when you're like, oh, there's no way I can get that done. But obviously there are. You could look at it as in like, hey, they got half of them, you know, because I think there might have been people that thought they were going to get none of them.
If you get half in school, that's not passing.
You know, I did get a lot of D's in school, so I'm just going to have to take your word for it because it seems like it's passing.
If we are the administration of law and order, if the judge says return the kids by July 10th, you return the kids by July 10th, or you do not claim to be the administration of law and order.
So you're saying that this administration is acting hypocritically for the first time in the terms of being there?
She got him. She uncovered it.
He finally figured it out. Yeah, this is the first time he's been on record. We'll start keeping a tally. We'll keep it on the big board here like we're having a telethon. So what was the deadline extended to? Are they looking into that still?
Yes. And then there's still the older kids to contend with.
Yeah. They just went with the under five because that is obviously the, sort of the most egregious, I guess. And then there was a report, I think this was last week, about, you know, the toddler who was returned to his mother and he was infested with lice. So obviously, you know, I think maybe it said that he hadn't been showered or something like that. So there's obviously a lot of questions for how this is being handled. But what do you see as a fix, Chelsea? Other than, you know, impeachment and, you know, things like that. But like,
fix for everything.
The fix for this one issue. Yeah, yeah. Because that it's not like Pence is going to make anything any better anyway. So
I mean, all hands on deck on taking care of these kids and reuniting them with their parents. I don't know what it would take. It should be such a priority that Trump should not meet with Putin. Even argue with NATO, which, by the way, I don't know why. Tell me if I'm crazy for believing this. I know Trump is really upset that not all the participating countries in NATO pay their 2% GDP towards military. But if you are so upset about that and that we're paying more, we're paying 3.5% of our GDP, can't we just say we have a budget? We are a responsible fiscal country and 2% of our GDP is X number of dollars and we will put X number of dollars towards it and not a penny over. And if somebody else wants to step up to the plate and make up the difference, great. If not, we have a little bit less military presence. I mean, rather than bully everybody and say, pay your 2%, when the 2% is actually a goal, not an obligation. So why can't we just stop overspending?
Well, I mean, that's a question that goes back to, I don't know, when did this country start? So I'm going to say, I guess, 242 years? How do we stop overspending? They're just not capable of it. What were you going to say, Steve?
Well, I was going to make a pun about we overspend on the military so we can up employment in the military, and then when they get back, we just don't take care of them. That's the American tradition. Like, that's not a new thing we do. But that's I agree that he clearly doesn't want to deal with NATO. Like, a rational, actual deal maker and negotiator would have walked in there and said 2%, we're out. He doesn't want to deal with NATO. He doesn't know how to take a nuanced stance on this.
I'm starting to believe that he is just finding a path out of NATO.
I think that those tea leaves are definitely there.
He's gonna create an alliance with Russia.
Well, that was what I was going to say to your earlier point about how he shouldn't take the time to meet with Putin. I do think that when your boss tells you that you have to sit down with him, you're not able to say no. So if Putin has summoned him back to the homeland, obviously that's where he needs to be. In the chat, our friend R. Scott Brown pointed out back to Rudy Giuliani, says that Rudy is Trump's last defense. When the cuffs come out, Trump will say he was represented poorly by the parentheses mentally deficient Giuliani. So obviously, and the Demonaut is also suggesting we could just leave NATO.
Why?
And he says it would be great if the U.S. left NATO.
Why?
You can tell us why it's great.
Yeah, I mean, NATO has helped us in after 9/11. Go into Afghanistan, and it's been said it's a worthy investment for us to invest in the security of Europe. So I would love to hear why it would be great if the U.S. left NATO. Well,
I think NATO's
been around. Hopefully get an answer.
NATO's been around long enough that I think to make it so binary is like we need to stay in NATO or leave NATO is a terrible way to approach it.
I think binary decisions are probably not a good way to approach very many things.
Let's
look at if we don't like how much we are spending, why don't we just cut back our own spending?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about the specific comment that President Trump made that, he feels like the European Union, this is not specifically NATO, but was set up to take advantage of the United States to attack our piggy bank. And the ambassador to Estonia resigned over those comments, which, I might know some people in the State Department, might know a few who are resigning in much smaller positions because it's just too infuriating. Do you think that what sort of impact do you think that comments like that have, not here at home, but around the rest of the world, Steve?
I think they have a lot of impact, and I think America has been its own bubble. That if I'm traveling abroad, like privately, I may consider just having a Canadian flag on my backpack. I'm America through and through. Like I get it, and like part like, but at the same time, like I just don't want to put up with the international stink we have had for a long time, for a very long time. Like internationally, we're not as regarded as like we are now. Like, internationally, we're considered either Jersey Shore or like Red Hats.
The only people who believe Trump when Trump says now the world respects us are the people who have not left the country.
Well,
if you have left the country before Trump and after Trump and believe what Trump is saying, I'd like to hear why, although I would still may argue that you're
I think it's a fairly consistent outlook. You know, I think there were certainly people around the world that liked Obama, but, I think that when you go back, basically this century, I think to Steve's point, I mean, I remember I backpacked through Europe. It was the year 2000, and this is before the election. Even that year, there were people backpacking with the Canadian patches on their backpacks because I guess somewhere that was the advice, like you just don't want the headaches. And I just flew no flags, man. That's not what I'm about.
But they'll look at you and know you're American, though.
Well,
so you have to. It's easier to fly the wrong flag.
I could talk a boot hockey as much as anybody. All right. I love Alanis Morissette. Anyway, there's, again, only a few more minutes, which is so often
Europe
what happens.
Europe has the capability of taking care of themselves. The U.S. does not need to protect European nations.
Was this the Demonaut's explanation?
This is Demonaut. Demonaut, you're a great person for watching this show. That feels a little oversimplified.
That's the best part of the show, the disagreement. So wait, let's actually read the comment because you sort of like half read it.
Europe has the capability of taking care of themselves. U.S. does not need to protect European nations. That's not necessarily what NATO's about.
NATO is about
cohesiveness among most world powers to keep peace.
And it also obligates European countries to help us out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about them.
Yeah.
So what the Article 5 is an attack on one is an attack on all. that includes us. So that's what I'm saying, that it was a benefit to us.
Right, but I think to a lot of people who are opposed to NATO, and it must be what the Demonaut is saying, is they do feel like it is a one-way street. Sure, on paper, they're there to help us out. Maybe they just feel like we're not getting helped nearly enough. You know, we're always helping them move. We're always carrying the couch. Who's helped us move lately? Who's helped us move our couch?
When have we moved? We've been the one.
That's true. We haven't really gone anywhere, have we?
Yeah, like we're where we are, and then we keep making a bunch of.
I understand if you feel like you're pouring all this money in. Well, stop pouring so much money in. But that doesn't mean that you need to get all the way out. Mm-hmm. Just meet your obligation and don't go beyond that.
Yeah.
I want to get this in here before we run out of time, and there are rumors that. Unsurprising to most of us, Hillary Clinton planning on a big 2020 comeback.
Unsurprising?
I am not surprised at all, because I think I said that every time that she says she's done, this was my, I was just like, I'm more convinced.
Can she get that Netflix deal? Obama got a Netflix deal. Can they pay her more, like $1 more than Obama, and give her a Netflix deal?
I was just going to say, if you hear that and you're Republican, or Donald Trump, who, you know, some people say is a Republican, you're just like, oh yeah, please God, yes, please, please come back, Hillary, run again. Because, you know, I think that that just shows, if she were to actually run and she were to get the support of the party, it would be clear that they didn't learn anything from 2016. I mean, I think there are a lot more people that are, I don't know about more qualified, but they at least have a better chance of getting elected. I think you've seen how that went. And, you know, sorry for Mrs. Clinton, but that time is definitely behind you. Your turn, you did get leapfrogged by Obama. That was when it was supposed to be your turn. Maybe you would have won then. But once that happened, it clearly wasn't going to happen for you. I don't know. I think that, and Chelsea, I'll go to you first. But you know, for her ego, I can't imagine any reason why she would run. Like, she has to know she's not the best person. I mean, she doesn't, but she should know.
I think that you're right in that the establishment has clearly not learned their lesson or do not want to see what's happening. At this point in time, I think Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has a better shot of being president, and she hasn't even been elected to Congress. No, she's actually 28.
Yeah, so but you know what? She still has a better chance than, or at least at some point, being elected president. Yeah. And it's just sad, you know, when, you know, for anybody who has a soft spot for Hillary, and look, there's probably a lot of people watching that don't, but it's just like, oh, really? You know what? They should just put her somewhere where she thinks she's running for president, you know? You could do like a Truman Show. You just kind of drive her around a soundstage and you think she's giving speeches.
It's rough. She needs to learn that this isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't care about her learning. It's the Democratic establishment, right, party machine that is giving her any idea that that's a good idea, who hasn't learned their lesson.
But then they need to stop placating her so she can learn that, like, she was never that popular. It always felt... It kind of felt like a king's rule. Like, we all kind of, I wasn't super on board with her. I was very much a Bernie leftist, in the sense that I had this comparison at the time, which was, before Trump got the Republican nomination, I kind of wanted the Democratic Party to fall apart so that a candidate like Bernie Sanders could actually just run as Bernie Sanders, not with the Democratic Party that seems to be in a bit of a mess. Whereas now, with Trump as president, my analogy for the Democratic Party is like, if your football team is a Super Bowl team, is a playoff team, but not a Super Bowl team, and everyone's calling for the head coach's head.
Right.
If you fire the head coach, you're going to not be a playoff team for 10 years in hopes you'll eventually be a Super Bowl team. That's how I feel about the Democratic Party. I want it to fail. I want to cut the head off of it and then, like, see
let something rise from the ashes.
And, like, see the actual... I refrain from saying the socialist Democrat only because other people turn that around. But, like, progressive or far-left liberal candidates, I want them to have a chance to truly speak to people the way Bernie did, the way I'm not going to pronounce her name, Ocasio. Okay, well then.
So look, you are going to pronounce it.
I am going to pronounce it right. Job. But like the way those people are actually reaching their constituents and running on issues, and it might just need ground roots and a hard reset. But we can't have that because who the president is.
Yeah, I mean, there was something about Hillary running that was reminiscent of, I would say, John McCain and Bob Dole, two people that was like, well, it's your turn now. And it was just like, it wasn't her turn anymore. And I think that you're thinking about the Democratic Party basically, you know, collapsing probably felt more of a comforting idea when the alternative wasn't Donald Trump.
Like, when it was Mitt Romney, when it was Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz.
Oh, maybe God. Not Ted Cruz, but you know, I was going to say Rob Portman, but I don't think that
wrong country.
That's a senator. I know who I'm talking about.
Oh, I thought you were talking about
about Justin Trudeau with the fake eyebrows.
No, I thought you were talking about the Portman, the mayor of the Canadian, I can't even remember, it was in Ontario, that was...
Rob Ford? No, that can't be it.
Rob Ford would have been a fun president.
He was pretty popular.
He was very popular with the...
Name recognition.
Just think, Rob Ford would have been great for relations with Colombia and Bolivia. You know, there's just some country. Marion Barry would be in the White House anyway. But I feel like anyway that's what we'll wind up with is like that. All of a sudden is like, oh no, we can't blow up the party. At least not right now. Mm. We have to blow it up a little later. You know, when there's
The year we don't make the playoffs is when we fire the head coach. Yeah. Because then what's the difference?
Or it could just have an epiphany, an awakening, without having to be destroyed, without having to hit rock bottom. But we shall see what they choose to do.
That's not going to happen if Hillary wants to run again.
Well, Hillary can do whatever she wants to do. She can decide to run, not whatever.
Or if Kamala Harris gets a nod, just because.
The more important thing is what is the party machine supporting.
Yeah, and I think that there's still enough people that, you know, they feel like they owe that family. There's probably, I don't know, manila envelopes with photographs that could be placed on people's desks. So they're like, oh, yeah, we're definitely for Hillary. You know, just all sorts of levels like that. Mm-hmm. And look, they're able to generate a lot of money. And I don't know. I saw that story and I was just like, oh, what is wrong with her? Well, there's so much.
It sounds like you've described Bill Belichick. To bring it back to a sports analogy.
All right.
Go ahead. Sorry. No, what are you gonna say? I wanted to give you the final word. I was letting you have it.
Sorry. No, I was just, I don't want to make this about Hillary. I don't want to knock her personally.
And it shouldn't be, but, you know, look, there's a lot of reasons why. I don't know how old she is. I just know she keeps falling down. I know she doesn't look like she's doing well. And it's enough already, you know? I mean, it is 10 years past the point where you seemed like a viable candidate for president. I mean, in 2016, the only reason she seemed like a viable candidate is like, well, she's going against Donald Trump. Who could possibly lose that election? And we have our answer. Let us know if you're watching the show after the fact. You can leave comments in the chat. Thanks for everybody who was in the live chat. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ and check out Marvel TV Weekly Sundays at 10 p.m. Pacific right here on AfterBuzz. And Steve, where do people find you and where do they find you on the network?
They can find me here and now, but also on Twitter at Steve Kaufman. That is KAUFMANN. I'm also staying in the building and watching SmackDown Live, which is a wrestling show, which I'm probably not going to tweet this link because I don't want to split my audience.
That's a great point. No, I know. It's you know what? You're there to make SmackDown great again. And Chelsea, where do people find you?
At Chelsea Glacia.
And we will find all of you back here next Tuesday. Scott will be back. Tamara will be back. We don't know. Who else will be here? We'll find out. But until then, have a good one. Thanks for everybody.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
Herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.